Chapter 6. And be this Ralph Randolph, or Ralph Peveril, call him as you please, had, it seems, a most beautiful lady to his wife, who was daughter of Angelric, one of Edward the Confessor's noblemen. He had two sons by her, William Peveril, a famed soldier, and Lord or Governor of Dover Castle, which he surrendered to William the Conqueror, after the battle in Sussex, and Payne Peveril, his youngest, who was Lord of Cambridge. When the eldest son delivered up the castle, the lady, his mother, above named, who was the celebrated beauty of the age, was it seems there, and the Conqueror fell in love with her, and whether by force or by consent, took her away, and she became his mistress, or what else you please to call it. By her he had a son, who was called William, after the Conqueror's Christian name, but retained the name of Peveril, and was afterwards created by the Conqueror Lord of Nottingham. This lady afterwards, as is supposed, by way of penance for her yielding to the Conqueror, founded a nunnery at the village of Hatfield Peveril, mentioned above, and there she lies buried in the chapel of it, which is now the parish church, where her memory is preserved by a tombstone under one of the windows. Thus we have several towns, where any ancient parks have been placed, called by the name of Hatfield on that very account. As Hatfield Broad Oak in this county, Bishop's Hatfield in Hertfordshire, and several others. But I return to King Edward's merry way, as I call it, of granting this forest to this Ralph Pepperking, which I find in the ancient records, in the very words it was passed in, as follows. Take my explanations with it for the sake of those that are not used to the ancient English. The grant in Old English. Itch Edward Coning, have given of my forest the keeping of the hundred of Chelmer and Dancing, to Randolph Pepperking, unto his kindling, with heard and hind, doe, and bock, hare, and fox, cat, and brock, wild fowl with his flock, partridge, pheasant hen, and pheasant cock, with green and wild stub and stock, to keepin' and to yemen with all her might, both by day, and eke by night, and hounds for to hold, good and swift and bold. 4 greyhound and 6 ratches, for hare and fox, and wild cats, and therefore itch made them my book. Witness the Bishop of Woolston, and book Ilred Menion, and Swain of Essex, our brother, and taken him many other and our steward Howlane, that by sought me for him. The explanation in modern English, I Edward the King, have made ranger of my forest of Chelmsford hundred and Deering hundred, Ralph Peveril, for him and his heirs forever, with both the red and fallow deer, hare and fox, otter and badger, wild fowl of all sorts, partridges and pheasants, timber and underwood roots and tops, with power to preserve the forest, and watch it against deer stealers and others. With a right to keep hounds of all sorts, 4 greyhounds and 6 terriers and foxhounds, and other hounds. And to this end I have registered this my grant in the crown rolls or books, to which the bishop has set his hand as a witness for any one to read. Also signed by the king's brother or, as some think, the Chancellor Swain, then Earl or Count of Essex, he might call such other witnesses, to sign as he thought fit. Also the king's high steward was a witness, at whose request this grant was obtained of the king. There are many gentlemen seats on this side the country, and a great assembly set up at New Hall, near this town, much resorted to by the neighboring gentry. I shall next proceed to the county of Suffolk, as my first design directed me to do. From Harwich, therefore, having a mind to view the harbor, I sent my horses round by Manningtree, where there is a timber bridge over the Stour, called Cataway Bridge, and took a boat up the river Orwell for Ipswich. A traveler will hardly understand me, especially a seaman, when I speak of the river Stour, and the river Orwell at Harwich, for they know them by no other names than those of Manningtree Water and Ipswich Water. So while I am on salt water, I must speak as those who use the sea may understand me, and when I am up in the country among the inland towns again, I shall call them out of their names no more. It is 12 miles from Harwich up the water to Ipswich. Before I come to the town, I must say something of it, because speaking of the river requires it. In former times, that is to say, since the writer of this remembers the place very well, and particularly just before the late Dutch wars, Ipswich was a town of very good business. Particularly it was the greatest town in England for large colliers or coal ships employed between Newcastle and London. Also they built the biggest ships and the best, for the said fetching of coals of any that were employed in that trade. They built, also, there so prodigious strong, that it was an ordinary thing for an Ipswich collier, if no disaster happened to him, to reign, as seamen call it, 40 or 50 years, and more. In the town of Ipswich the masters of these ships generally dwelt, and there were, as they then told me, above 100 sail of them, belonging to the town at one time, the least of which carried 50 score, as they computed, that is, 300 chaldron of coals. This was about the year 1668 when I first knew the place. This made the town be at that time so populous. For those masters, as they had good ships at sea, so they had large families who lived plentifully, and in very good houses in the town, and several streets were chiefly inhabited by such. The loss or decay of this trade accounts for the present pretended decay of the town of Ipswich, of which I shall speak more presently. The ships wore out, the masters died off, the trade took a new turn. Dutch flyboats taken in the war, and made free ships by Act of Parliament, thrust themselves into the coal trade for the interest of the captors, such as the Yarmouth and London merchants, and others, and the Ipswich men dropped gradually out of it, being discouraged by those Dutch flyboats. These Dutch vessels, which cost nothing but the caption, were bought cheap, carried great burthens, and the Ipswich building fell off for want of price, and so the trade decayed, and the town with it. I believe this will be owned for the true beginning of their decay, if I must allow it to be called a decay. But to return to my passage up the river. In the winter time those great collier ships, above mentioned, are always laid up, as they call it. That is to say, the coal trade abates at London, the citizens are generally furnished, their stores taken in, and the demand is over, so that the great ships, the northern seas and coast being also dangerous, the nights long, and the voyage hazardous, go to sea no more, but lie by, the ships are unrigged, the sails, etc. carried ashore, the topmasts struck, and they ride moored in the river, under the advantages and security of sound ground, and a high woody shore, where they lie as safe as in a wet dock, and it was a very agreeable sight to see, perhaps 200 sail of ships, of all sizes, lie in that posture every winter. All this while, which was usually from Michaelmas to Lady Day, the masters lived calm and secure with their families in Ipswich, and enjoying plentifully, what in the summer they got laboriously at sea, and this made the town of Ipswich very populous in the winter, for as the masters, so most of the men, especially their mates, boatswains, carpenters, etc. were of the same place, and lived in their proportions, just as the masters did, so that in the winter there might be perhaps 1,000 men in the town more than in the summer, and perhaps a greater number. To justify what I advance here, that this town was formerly very full of people, I ask leave to refer to the account of Mr. Camden, and what it was in his time. His words are these. Ipswich has a commodious harbor, has been fortified with a ditch and rampart, has a great trade, and is very populous, being adorned with 14 churches, and large private buildings. This confirms what I have mentioned of the former state of this town, but the present state is my proper work. I therefore return to my voyage up the river. The sight of these ships thus laid up in the river, as I have said, was very agreeable to me in my passage from Harwich, about 35 years before the present journey, and it was in its proportion equally melancholy to hear that there were now scarce 40 sail of good colliers that belonged to the whole town. In a creek in this river, called Lavington Creek, we saw at low water such shoals, or hills rather, of mussels, that great boats might have loaded with them, and no miss have been made of them. Near this creek, Sir Samuel Barnardiston had a very fine seat, as, also, a decoy for wild ducks, and a very noble estate, but it is divided in too many branches since the death of the ancient possessor. But I proceed to the town, which is the first in the county of Suffolk of any note this way. Ipswich is seated, at the distance of 12 miles from Harwich, upon the edge of the river, which, taking a short turn to the west, the town forms, there, a kind of semicircle, or half-moon, upon the bank of the river. It is very remarkable, that though ships of 500 ton may, upon a spring tide, come up very near this town, and many ships of that burthen have been built there, yet the river is not navigable any farther than the town itself, or but very little, no, not for the smallest beats, nor does the tide, which rises sometimes 13 or 14 feet, and gives them 24 feet water very near the town, flow much farther up the river than the town, or not so much, as to make it worth speaking of. He took little notice of the town, or at least of that part of Ipswich, who published in his wild observations on it that ships of 200 ton are built there. I affirm that I have seen a ship of 400 ton launched at the building yard, close to the town, and I appeal to the Ipswich colliers, those few that remain, belonging to this town, if several of them carrying 70 score of coals, which must be upward of 400 ton, have not formerly been built here, but superficial observers must be superficial writers, if they write at all, and to this day, at John's Ness, within a mile and a half of the town itself, ships of any burthen, may be built and launched even at neap tides. I am much mistaken too, if since the Revolution some very good ships have not been built at this town, and particularly the Milford or Milford Galley, a ship of 40 guns, as the Greyhound frigate, a man of war of 36 to 40 guns, was at John's Ness. But what is this towards lessening the town of Ipswich, any more than it would be to say, they do not build men of war, or East India ships, or ships of 500-ton burden at St. Catharines, or at Battle Bridge in the Thames, when we know that a mile or two lower, viz. At Radcliffe, Limehouse, or Deptford, they build ships of 1,000-ton, and might build first-rate men of war too, if there was occasion. And the like might be done in this river of Ipswich, within about 2 or 3 miles of the town, so that it would not be at all an out of the way speaking to say, such a ship was built at Ipswich, any more than it is to say, as they do, that the Royal Prince, the great ship lately built for the South Sea Company, was London built, because she was built at Limehouse. And why then is not Ipswich capable of building, and receiving the greatest ships in the navy, seeing they may be built and brought up again laden, within a mile and half of the town? But the neighborhood of London, which sucks the vitals of trade in this island to itself, is the chief reason of any decay of business in this place, and I shall, in the course of these observations, hint at it, where many good seaports and large towns, though farther off than Ipswich, and as well fitted for commerce, are yet swallowed up by the immense indrift of trade to the city of London, and more decayed beyond all comparison than Ipswich is supposed to be. As Southampton, Weymouth, Dartmouth, and several others which I shall speak to in their order, and if it be otherwise at this time, with some other towns, which are lately increased in trade and navigation, wealth, and people, while their neighbors decay, it is because they have some particular trade, or accident to trade, which is a kind of nostrum to them, inseparable to the place, and which fixes there by the nature of the thing, as the herring fishery to Yarmouth, the coal trade to Newcastle, the Leeds clothing trade, the export of butter and lead, and the great corn trade for Holland, is to Hull, the Virginia and West India trade at Liverpool, the Irish trade at Bristol, and the like. Thus the war has brought a flux of business and people, and consequently of wealth, to several places, as well as to Portsmouth, Chatham, Plymouth, Falmouth, and others, And were any wars like those to continue 20 years with the Dutch, or any nation whose fleets lay that way, as the Dutch do, it would be the like perhaps at Ipswich in a few years, and at other places on the same coast. But at this present time an occasion offers to speak in favor of this port, namely, the Greenland fishery, lately proposed to be carried on by the South Sea Company. On which account I may freely advance this, without any compliment to the town of Ipswich. No place in Britain is equally qualified like Ipswich, whether we respect the cheapness of building and fitting out their ships and shallops, also furnishing, victualling, and providing them with all kinds of stores, convenience for laying up the ships after the voyage, room for erecting their magazines, warehouses, rope walks, cooperages, etc. on the easiest terms, and especially for the noisome cookery, which attends the boiling their blubber, which may be on this river as it ought to be, remote from any places of resort. Then their nearness to the market for the oil when it is made, and which, above all, ought to be the chief thing considered in that trade, the easiness of their putting out to sea, when they begin their voyage, in which the same wind, that carries them from the mouth of the haven, is fair to the very seas of Greenland. I could say much more to this point, if it were needful, and in few words could easily prove, that Ipswich must have the preference of all the port towns of Britain, for being the best center of the Greenland trade, if ever that trade fall into the management of such a people as perfectly understand, and have a due honest regard to its being managed with the best husbandry, and to the prosperity of the undertaking in general. But whether we shall ever arrive at so happy a time, as to recover so useful a trade to our country, which our ancestors had the honor to be the first undertakers of, and which has been lost only through the indolence of others, and the increasing vigilance of our neighbors, that is not my business here to dispute. What I have said is only to let the world see what improvement this town and port is capable of. I cannot think but that Providence, which made nothing in vain, cannot have reserved so useful, so convenient a port, to lie vacant in the world, but that the time will some time or other come, especially considering the improving temper of the present age, when some peculiar beneficial business may be found out, to make the port of Ipswich as useful to the world, and the town as flourishing, as nature has made it proper and capable to be. As for the town, it is true, it is but thinly inhabited, in Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.